Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Thursday, May the 8th, 2025. And in studio with me today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
And Chris Woodward.
Hello.
So Ray Pritchard is MIA today. And
that's why I'm in.
You're filling in for him. You're pinch hitting. It's baseball season.
Came off the bench.
Ready to swing the bat.
Well, I'm ready.
Okay. Was Ray out of town or something? Brent Creeley, I mean, I don't.
Ray's out teaching the Bible.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, sir. And he'll be back next week.
Like in the backyard? Or is he like traveling the country?
He's traveling.
Oh.
Yes.
You preach the gospel to every creature.
It's vacation Bible school.
That's what Ray's house. You know. I thought maybe he went to the backyard and had a few kids over or something.
He's off preaching the Bible somewhere, leaving us on our own.
Ray is much in demand.
Yes, he is. He's an excellent Bible teacher. Mm-hmm. I just love Ray.
If you want to get in touch with him, go to keepbelieving.com. Keepbelieving.com. All right. Well, so a lot to talk about, a lot going on in the country and internationally, too. But the big news is what's happening in the Oval Office right now, right?
Yes. The Oval Office right now, President Trump, as we speak, is announcing a trade deal with the United Kingdom, otherwise known as Great Britain or England, as some people also refer to it.
I don't think it's otherwise known as, Chris.
Well,
can I correct you there, brother?
Sometimes people are confused with UK and England.
I'm not above you. We're equals here in terms of. In the eyes of God, okay. But the UK is England, Great Britain, and Ireland.
Well, true, Ireland. Yeah. I guess Wales. Yeah.
England is a separate
Scotland.
Country.
Correct.
Is a separate. Well, it's not even a country.
Correct.
England. It's its own.
A trade deal with the UK would involve England.
That's what I'm talking about, Chris. Just go with that. Anyway, Great back Britain. To your story, brother.
So Donald Trump, who's the president of the United States of America, is announcing a, quote, major
now,
trade deal.
The United
deal.
States of America is made up of 50 states, Chris.
Yes.
And but right. we
So Trump.
soon to be 51.
I liked how you said we're equal, Chris, in the sight of God.
Yes.
But not in terms of AFA.
Right, yes.
Go ahead.
All
go
right.
ahead.
Your counterpart in the Oval Office, Mr. President, is announcing a trade deal with a country that used to be our parent when we were part of the United Kingdom.
Right, right.
And it's a major trade deal. It is something President Trump actually gave a little hint on last night on Truth Social. Caroline Levitt shared that on X. The UK, for people not aware, we have long been a major trade partner with the UK. That was one of the issues that looked like we were going to be there to help them when Brexit began many years ago. And so Donald Trump is announcing the first of major trade deals. This, of course, comes ahead of a weekend meeting with Chinese representatives to talk about trade. We do have some audio here. Steve cut this for us just a moment ago. Clip.
The UK will reduce or eliminate numerous non-tariff barriers that unfairly discriminated against American products, but this is now turning out, I think, really to be a great deal for both countries because it'll be really great for the UK also. So they'll also be fast-tracking American goods through their customs process, so our exports go to a very, very quick form of approval, and there won't be any red tape. Things are going to move very quickly both ways. Furthermore, in a historic step, the deal includes plans that will bring the United Kingdom into the economic security alignment with the United States. That's the first of its kind. So we have a big economic security blanket, and that's very important. And we feel very, very comfortable with that because it's been a great ally, truly one of our great allies. I mean, a lot of people say our greatest ally.
Now, the stock market appears to like this. As we speak, the Dow is up 189, the NASDAQ is up 108, and the S&P 23.
Well, what is the Chris, you may not know this because we just played the president's announcement of this trade deal with the UK. But what's this economic security blanket? That's the first I've heard of that. I know we've had like a nuclear umbrella over some of our allies where we've said we would protect them in the event of war.
It could be a oddly worded reference to what we trade back and forth with the UK. For example, we trade a lot of machinery and transportation equipment in addition to crude oil, gas, and other dry goods to the U.S. So us trading that to them gives them things they can use. And then they export things like cars, pharmaceuticals, and other goods to the U.S.
Okay.
Also, they export James Bond movies.
that are made, they're British, but they're made in the United States. So that's kind of an economic
It's a trading
partnership.
Agreement.
Yeah, it's a partnership.
Did you know that not all people that have portrayed James Bond are from the U.K.?
Oh, where are they from?
There was that Roger Lazenby guy that played him once for Honor Majesty's Secret Service. I believe he was from either France or Australia.
France?
That's what I was going to say. That's blasphemy. James Bond?
Why don't you have Inspector Clouseau stumbling around through a James Bond movie?
There was a time where James Brolin actually was thought of as possibly portraying him back in the 80s, and he did a screen test for that film. I'm a giant nerd for knowing that, but...
Fred, you've just been soaking in all this knowledge we've been dispensing. What are your thoughts over there on this trade agreement?
Well, with regards to the important part of the trade agreement, we have their James Bond. They get our Mission Impossible.
Duly noted.
That's along with Tom the rest Cruise. Of the world.
I was watching a little bit of this news conference, which is still going on as we're speaking, but it was really neat. President Trump dominating the news conference. He has a little telephone right to his left there. And he said, I've got the Prime Minister of Britain on the line here, Keir Starmer. You want to say a few words?
Hello.
This is really good. Thank you, Mr. President.
Just a spoonful
actually,
of sugar.
He said, thank you very much, Donald.
Pip, pip.
Donald. So they're like they're really good buds.
Mm. Yeah. Well, evidently both parties are pleased to have this agreement because otherwise they wouldn't be doing this public event from the Oval Office.
Trump needed this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
They needed a victory, quotation marks.
From one of the bigger trading partners. And UK would certainly represent that.
Because the tariff battle has been huge, has been dominating the headlines. We've seen the stock market going up and down, up and down, up and down. But now they have one that apparently has been inked. And so this is good. I'm very anxious to see what happens this weekend in Switzerland when U.S. negotiators sit down with the Chinese.
Yeah.
See what comes of that.
I think you got a good point here in terms of this is a big win for President Trump and his administration because kind of the talk was, as I was reading articles about the tariff war, he needed a win because that will also be a push for other countries to ink their own deal.
Yeah.
Especially, and maybe that's why he used this phrase, economic security blanket. Maybe there are some promises. And, you know, we used to have most favored nation trade status.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is kind of a replacement for that, where, hey, listen, you get a special deal if you ink a deal now between Memorial Day.
It may have something to do with exclusivity.
Yeah.
In that you're not going to purchase, let's just say, this item from China. You're going to buy it from us.
Yeah.
And so there is that kind of really close neighborly type thing that's in place.
Okay. So just before we move on here from this, because and maybe nobody here knows the answer to this question, again, to bring it down to like you're a 10-year-old or 9-year-old. So great UK had tariffs on products being shipped in the United going into their region there from the US. They tariffed us. We didn't tariff them. Trump slaps tariffs on them, and they take their tariffs away, and it's a level playing field. Is that what's happened here?
Yeah, I don't know the details. It's just being announced right now. But in general, I think that's what you're I think that's what the deal is. The deal is the UK has to lower its tariffs, or I don't know whether eliminate them. We'll find out the details, and vice versa. So you have more of an even or level playing field when it comes
that's
to
the whole point of Trump's efforts.
Yes.
Right? Is
yes.
to say these countries around the world have imposed tariffs on our products that we send them. We haven't imposed tariffs on them heretofore. Mm-hmm. So it's unfair. So what am I going to do if I'm President Trump? I'm going to slap tariffs on all these countries that are hitting us with tariffs. Tariffs really amount to just a fee. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we're going to thereby we're going to even the playing field around the world and the UK. But you have to negotiate these deals with each country individually. So it's going to take some time. But UK is the first one, I guess.
MSNBC is saying Trump is pressed on details of UK trade deal that's still, quote, being written. Mm. So
somebody later today will claim that we're sold a bill of goods over this, and, you know, he's just trying to...
That's why I wonder, we're not able to hear the live press conference right now. We're just reading about it, but that's why I asked the question as simple as I did, and hopefully the White House will give us a simple answer. I don't think President Trump would concede to a trade deal that didn't do the things that I just mentioned a few moments ago, basically. Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. So, man, the president's been very busy. He met with the Prime Minister of Canada. What, was it yesterday or the day before?
Monday, I think it was.
How'd you view that meeting, Fred?
Well, I thought that it was interesting. You had the president and you had the Prime Minister of Canada sitting in those golden chairs in that office. But President Trump, in this case, really dominated the discussion.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister of Canada said very little. A few times, it was almost like the kid putting up his hand, can I speak?
Yeah.
And but Trump, unlike the Zelensky meeting back a month or so ago, the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister of Canada is non-combative.
Yeah.
But there was an interesting moment, and maybe you guys talked about this, when Trump was asked from the reporters in the room about the 51st state thing. And the Prime Minister responded basically saying, you know, I just gone through election campaign, and I talked to the people who own Canada, the voters, and they don't want to sell.
Yeah.
Just like you don't want to sell this office, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. And so that... And that was the one thing that got the most attention. But I think what happened, they met afterwards to talk about tariffs. And my impression is that Canada and the United States are still a long way from an agreement on the tariff issue. Mm-hmm. Long way. I think what's going to happen, the new prime minister is a globalist.
Yeah.
And what he is saying, he wants to open up more trade with Europe.
Yeah.
He was head of the Bank of England at one time. And so he has very close relationships with those people. I think you're going to see a more globalist approach by this Canadian prime minister. And I also think he's a banker. And he will use the power of banks to get what he wants. You remember what happened with Trudeau and the trucker protest back at COVID?
Yeah, shut down their bank accounts.
Trudeau shut down their bank accounts.
Yep, mm-hmm. Froze them.
I don't think this prime minister is above doing that to get what he wants. We know what some of these radical climate change, and he's a climate changer, what they do. They go to banks and they say, don't lend money to this group.
Yeah.
Give money to this group who believes in what we believe about climate change.
Yeah.
So that's what you're going to see from this prime minister of Canada.
Mm-hmm. Man, a climate changer, that sounds like so... like a game changer.
Climate change.
He's a climate changer, man. You want to be like him.
Like a superhero.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's climate changer.
Speaking of which.
Yes.
We're going to move to our next story, which involves the myth of global warming.
Yes. Al Gore could not be reached for comment.
The myth of man-made global warming.
Al Gore could not be reached for comment. Yeah.
So I'm going to share this on our Facebook page, and it's from the Daily Mail, although I think New York Post and several other news outlets did report this, and understandably so. The reason is there's been a discovery in Antarctica that has climate change deniers having mass celebrations. Long story short, Antarctica is not melting like Al Gore and many other climate change alarmists have long said it will or would do. Which is further proof that maybe they're not right when they tell us that climate change is going to destroy the Earth and cause polar ice caps to melt. And this is really the umpteenth installment of you were wrong when you said this. But that's all the more reason why, again, climate change deniers are celebrating.
Okay. So I read this story. This is involving a Antarctica, obviously. And it's a place where they measure... Well, I guess many places where climate scientists measure glaciers and so forth to determine how much melting there is going on or not. And in this case, this was a big measurement that was taken in Antarctica, and they discovered that actually the ice is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Fred, have I got that basically
that
right?
That is correct. After a number of years of the amount of ice building being diminished.
Right.
What they're finding in recent years is that the amount of ice is growing, the level of ice, the height of the ice in Antarctica is growing, which is directly opposite to what the Al Gores of this world have been saying.
There was some shrinking of the ice.
Yes, there was.
For 19 or 20 years.
Right.
And the climate
Trump
change.
Trump was elected.
Yeah. And he slapped a tariff.
He slapped a tariff on that Antarctica.
Yes.
And it stopped melting right away.
That's right.
Big, beautiful ice.
Bigger than you've ever seen before. And so the climate change folks were pointing to that and saying that, see, there's proof. Mm-hmm. Now we wait to see what they hear what they say now.
Yeah, well, every time, you know, it used to be global warming, then it became climate change. And they started to say that, well, even the Earth's warming temperatures is going to make winter worse. But I've talked to organizations like the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and, you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't say a rise in temperatures is going to cause it to be more cold and hotter.
Yeah, these global warming / climate change activists, some of whom include scientists too, they are heads I win, tails you lose. Okay? Mm-hmm. So anything that happens, they're going to say that's due to man-made global warming or carbon emissions. Anything that happens, whether it's warming or cooling, freezing or whatever, hurricane season, global warming, man-made global warming.
Right.
I remember when they declared that about 7 years ago, we're going to have the worst hurricane season, superstorms, like 10 of them going to be hitting the U.S. coast.
And then the next year,
there was nothing. There was
nothing.
Now, that doesn't mean there won't be five this year, but next year there could be zero. Again.
Like always.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been this way.
Thank you. Yeah. Cyclical.
Yeah.
The weather, since you can go back, we've had ice ages. We've had warmer times around the globe. Mm-hmm. You have El Nino that affects the U.S. weather a lot one way or the other. So. It's just whether there's global warming or not going on somewhere. Yes, there may be, but it's not because of it's not man-made.
Well, and let me just say one other thing here. I mean, we can still stay on this story, Chris. It depends what you've got there, but I will say this: if it turns out that we have a period of like 10 years of global cooling, this is going to further damage scientific. The reputation of science, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Broadly speaking, we just went through COVID and all that that happened.
Right.
And all of that, you know, you got to follow the science. You got to follow the science, all that. And a lot of people have come through that going, you know, they kept telling us X, Y, Z, but it was A, B, C, and they knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to, if this happens with this global climate, this climate change thing, then how are people going to, with a straight face, say, oh, you got to follow the science? Because everyone's going to say, remember COVID and remember climate change? We don't know what to believe.
It will ruin the, it will ruin or damage the reputation amongst, in the minds of some people. But people in media, mainstream media, will find a way to explain this away or get us distracted on something else or whatnot. And the reason
not
I say
me.
This.
Not me. Well, they ain't going to get me distracted. Well,
the reason I say this is because, like, the Associated Press is a really good example here. For people that are not aware of this, a lot of news outlets, most news outlets run AP material, and sometimes without changing anything. Yeah, small market TV stations especially will just rip and read whatever the AP says, and then that's why people think, okay, maybe there is something to climate change. Case in point, there is a story in the news today, and these are some of the headlines. Climate-fueled wildfires cause damage in North Dakota. Climate-fueled wildfires, not flames or gasoline or people made a fire and it spread and all these other things. We're now blaming, like, in the headline before you even get to the story. So that's why I say the news media will do what they can to still make people think that this thing in Antarctica is misleading.
Well,
because
while that's true, it's going to fall increasingly on deaf ears.
I hope so.
That's the point I'm making, is that the average person on the street, their eyes are going to roll back into their heads when someone starts trying to say, you know what, you shouldn't be running your lawnmower because you're affecting the climate.
Yeah,
we need to do something about cows because of methane emissions.
Yeah.
People are going to be, they're going to be rolling their eyes and saying, just get away from me, because you guys have been saying this. And it's the boy who cried wolf.
Meanwhile, the climate alarmists, I do not have the soundbite, but the climate alarmists that are that have been beating the drum over how we're killing the planet, they're the ones with the biggest carbon footprint, because people like John Kerry flying around on private planes, you got Senator Bernie Sanders wanting to fight the oligarchy, but he's going to take a Gulfstream everywhere to do it. They're
Al Gore.
Yeah, I mean, when Joe Biden was in, when Joe Biden was president, and he was claiming that climate change was the biggest threat to the environment, he was the one causing the problem.
Well, yeah.
If you believe the emissions thing.
Yeah, one of the most ridiculous examples of this, I remember. You remember when Mayfield, Kentucky, was hit so hard by the tornado about 3 or 4 years ago? Remember that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Look up the date for you.
And that's a community in western Kentucky, and that they listen, they have AFR there, too. But after that hit, then either Biden visited or he made a pronouncement, but he said this is because of global warming.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a tornado had never happened before,
especially in this part of the country.
Yeah, yeah, and so it was like, you're just exploiting this situation to make your political point, which, by the way, is unproven.
That's right.
So
that was in December of 2021.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to today's, you mean the tornado?
Yes, sir.
That hit Mayfield?
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Fred, and UK Frick. Chris
Plaid Woodward.
Hey, I like the plaid shirt, Chris.
I was told my people did come from Wales.
Yeah. Oh,
so
really?
We are from the UK.
Chris is making plaid great again.
Yes.
Poor Chris. We just give Chris
a
hard time.
Chris does a great
job.
You
got to pay your dues. You know what? Pay your dues on the show.
I got three people depending on me to eat, so you can do whatever you want. I'll take it.
Chris just takes one for the family team over here. All right. We will return momentarily. Much more to talk about happening in our country and around the world. The Catholic Church is trying to decide who their new leader will be, who the new Pope will be. We'll be back with more after this short timeout.
It's my turn. Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
One day many years ago, several members of a college math class were called to the board to work a problem. One young man went up to begin work on the problem, only to make a mistake at the very beginning. Despite the fact that he worked the rest of the problem correctly, he came out with a wrong answer because he had made the mistake at the start. The professor walked to the front of the room after the students had sat down and began going over the problems that the students had worked on. When he came to the one in which the young man had made a mistake at the beginning, he turned to the class and asked a question. How many of you gentlemen are ministerial students? Well, a few hands went up. Gentlemen, he continued, here is a sermon for you. This young man forgot to square at the beginning of the problem, and while the rest of the problem is worked correctly all the way through, he came out with the wrong answer. Now here's the sermon. You leave something undone that you should do at the beginning of life, and the answer will come out wrong at the end of life. Then the professor picked up the eraser from the chalkboard and turned to face the class again. Gentlemen, he said, here is another sermon. He then proceeded to erase the entire problem from the answer, working backward. When he came to the place where the mistake had been made, he erased that part, picked up the chalk, and wrote in the correct numbers. Then he turned to the young student and preached his second sermon. Try again, he said. You know, because of the Galilean, that's the way we can approach life. The simple sermon preached by that college professor has been experienced countless times since the carpenter first told his fisherman about the forgiveness of the Creator. It would be an impossible task to find the number of men and women who have come to the end of a problem in life only to find that they had the wrong answer. Then, with heads bowed and ashamed, they heard that grand master of men speak those two words, try again. Another chance, a new start, a clean blackboard. Isn't that one reason he came into our world like he did? To wipe the board clean when we forget to square. Many have experienced that sense of starting again. For them, it opened the doors that seemed shut forever. There are two tragedies involved here. One is that many refuse to admit that they made a mistake. They like to work the problem by their own rules. They accept no other criteria of judgment than their own. And of course, if you never make a mistake, you have no need to correct it. The second tragedy is that those who finally are willing to admit the error fail to let the supreme professor wipe the board clean, correct the error, and say to them, try again. The father knew that humans so many times need another chance. That's one reason he sent his son, so that we could indeed try again.
This has been My Turn with Don Weilman, a production of the American Family Association.
Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to His great mercy, He has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. 1 Peter 1:3.
American Family Radio.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Got to get the popcorn down.
Want me to pick up?
Here we go. So, welcome back, Tim, Ed, Fred, and Chris.
And in your defense, our popcorn is the best on the planet.
It's irresistible. You're a popcorn connoisseur.
So good.
You walk back there to get coffee, and that popcorn aroma just hits you down the hall.
If I could invent a cologne that smelled right. like that, I would wear it all the time. My wife would hate the smell right. of butter. She would hear it so often.
Brother Ed goes to the movies every day.
Or at least it smells like it.
Yeah. At the movies, they give you the tub.
Oh, yeah.
The tub of popcorn. And for $20, free refills. That sounds like a good deal, except you think, I'm going to be here 2 hours. How much popcorn can a man eat, you know? Well, if you're sharing it with people.
Yeah, I will say this.
Yeah.
And this is going to reflect poorly on me. Right. I know.
That's okay. We're all human.
But sometimes, now my wife doesn't like to go to the movies, and I rarely go anymore because there's just not anything very, very enticing to go. But if I do go, I'm going with my son and my daughter-in-law.
Right.
All right. And they're always wanting to get one bucket of popcorn, and we share it. And I don't do that, okay? First of all, because I don't want to have to run down there all the time. I'm right. going to pay for it.
You don't want to say pass the bucket.
Yes, right. I don't want to say pass the bucket, and I'm sorry. I love my son and daughter-in-law.
I know what you're going to say.
I don't want their hands sitting in the bucket right, of popcorn.
I know.
It's just well, not sanitary.
I was kind of like that till I got 11 grandchildren.
That's true.
It's futile.
That is true.
If you want popcorn, you're going to stick your hand in there with the rest of them.
And when they offer you one, you're going to have to take it from their dirty fingers and let them put it in your mouth.
You know,
you're right about that.
Bro, you just lose your germaphobe. All right, so the question before us last half hour, which was a trivia question from, because I remember I had it about a year ago on Trivia Friday.
Oh, okay, talking about.
And that is this, what is the difference between the UK and Great Britain?
That's an excellent question. And for those of you paying attention, I am going to have a question involving this somehow, some way tomorrow on Trivia Friday.
So you're not going to give the answer now to what I just asked.
No, we can. We can. But
Chris,
it's going to be
on Trivia Friday.
I have it looked up.
Okay. What is the answer to the question?
Okay. So you want to know the countries in the UK?
No, the difference between the UK and Great Britain.
Okay. The names Great Britain and United Kingdom are often used interchangeably. However, they are not actually synonymous. The reason for the two names and the difference between them has to do with the expansive history of the British Isles. I'm reading from Britannica.
Okay.
You know, it's totally accurate.
They ought to know.
It's in their backyard, right? The British Isles are a group of islands off the northwestern coast of Europe. The largest of these islands are Britain and Ireland. Smaller ones include the Isle of Wight. In the Middle Ages, the name Britain was also applied to a small part of France, now known as Brittany. As a result, Great Britain came into use to refer specifically to the island. However, that name had no official significance until 1707, when the island's rival kingdoms of England and Scotland were united as the Kingdom of Great Britain. Now, long story short, the countries that make up...
story.
Thank you.
It doesn't sound short.
I'll share this on our Facebook page. Which countries make up the United Kingdom? The answer is England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland.
That's Great Britain?
No, that's the UK, United Kingdom.
Okay.
Great Britain would be pretty much England, Scotland, and Wales.
Without...
Northern Ireland.
Correct. I'm understanding Britannica correctly.
Maybe I should use this as a trivia question tomorrow because it's...
I'll tell you who might know the answer to this because there's a lot of Christian history.
Yes.
And in Great Britain / UK, England.
You're not going to turn to someone named McFarland.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's a good one. Dr. Alex McFarland joins us, co-host of Exploring the Word with Brother Bert Harper each weekday afternoon here on American Family Radio. Hey, Alex. Good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody.
So, did you know the answer between what's different about UK and Great Britain?
Partially, but I'm learning here, sitting here listening. Those terms are kind of used interchangeably, but it's different, really.
So, question, McFarland, where does your family heritage hail from?
From Scotland. My dad was really, really into the Scottish genealogy, and supposedly that the McFarlands came here 200 years ago through Charleston, South Carolina. That's what we always heard. But
Stephen McDowell, who is a good friend of our ministry and has been with is a historian. Stephen's, by the way, who has a podcast now, a very popular podcast on American Family Radio's website. Stephen talks about his heritage, same as yours, McDowell. Max come from
Scotland.
Scotland. I guess some would come from Ireland. Is that right?
Yeah.
Some from Ireland. Some Max.
There are some Irish McFarlands, but my breed supposedly came from Scotland.
Mm-hmm. I think I think Mac or Mick it means like son of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that's what that.
I just saw that.
Yeah,
I can tell you what some people think your name means, Alex.
Is it acceptable for Christian radio?
It is. Yeah. Yes. The surname McFarland is a variation of McFarlane, meaning son of Parlan. Parlan is a Gaelic name likely derived from Partahan, which is linked to Irish mythology as spirit of the sea waves.
So Alex,
exactly.
Alex is not real. Is that what you're telling us here?
You're exactly right. Son of the ocean wave. That, believe it or not, that's what...
That's pretty cool sounding.
Yeah.
Parlan.
You know, the history of migration in the U.S., many people in the that came into the ports in the Carolinas, okay?
Yes.
That was a big... I mean, yes, you had the Northeast. You had New York and Boston and and other places, maybe. But you had a big migration into Charleston and... Mm-hmm. Some other. I guess was Charleston maybe the biggest port for a long time. There, you know what I'm saying?
Guess.
Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but a lot of the Scots and the people from Great Britain, but particularly the Scots, they went to the Carolinas, mm-hmm. came over to the like Alex's family, mm-hmm. and then they spread. They went west, but along the southern part of the U.S.
Yes, so they and a lot of them created the seed that we use to plant for our grass.
What's that, Ed?
Scots.
Oh, Scots. Did they?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ever seen ads for the Scots?
Yeah, I've seen. Oh, right? Yeah, the Scots ads. The Scots ads. But if you want to know why there's so many Macs all across Carolinas and Georgia and the mm-hmm. South over to Texas and Oklahoma. And
we have an Aberdeen that far from
here. Yeah, it's because Tennessee and Kentucky is because of that. Trace that all the way back to the Scottish people immigrating along in the southern ports of the U.S.
My grandfather on my mother's side spoke Gaelic.
Oh, really?
Irish? Mackenzie.
Mackenzie.
Okay. So a Mac. Yeah.
And where I'm from in Nova Scotia, Cape Breton has a Gaelic college to this day.
Huh.
And they teach the dancing, the sword dancing, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the, what do they call, river dance and all that. I like watching that. Remember, that was a kind of a fad for a while.
I did that for a while.
And you know what they say.
Video or it didn't happen.
Go ahead. What are you going to say, Alex?
Well, you know, of the McFarlands, we did a lot of family study. There were basically three. There were farmers, lawyers, and preachers. And I've been two of the three.
Yes, farmer.
Farmer and preacher. But a lot of McFarlands in Vicksburg, Mississippi. A lot, interestingly, wound up in the Southwest, like in Arizona and places like that. A lot of Scottish people ended up in the Boston area. But you know what's really interesting is that because of a guy named John Knox, a lot of the Scots were evangelist. I mean, there were a lot of Christian Scottish people, and during the 1700s and the colonial era, and this relates to like the Appalachian region, there are so many Presbyterian churches that were the Scottish Presbyterians up and down, you know, the Appalachian Trail, and Billy Graham's family, you know, they were, you know, heavy Presbyterians, and, you know, it relates to how the European Christians, they migrated over here and, you know, came through Charleston, came through Edenton, which was a port city in North Carolina, and of course in the, you know, Virginia and up there. And we have a great Christian history that, you know, I know the conversation began about the United Kingdom, but my goodness, there was so much in the aftermath of the Reformation, which started in 1517 in Germany. The gospel just spread and spread, you know, throughout England and Wales and all throughout, you know, the British Isles. And then they came over here in colonial America. And our nation is part of Christ's Great Commission, you know?
You know, that's you're talking about church history.
Yeah.
Tracing it back. Ed, were you going to say something? You're looking
I was just going to say, Alex mentioned John Knox. I remember this. I had to look it up to get the right wording. But Mary, Queen of Scots, is reputed to have said, "I fear the prayers of John Knox more than all the assembled armies of Europe."
Yeah.
That's,
I've heard that quote.
Causes shiver to run down your anybody's spine if you fear God, that praying people do move mountains.
So if you look back at, as I say, church history, and you know how one domino falls and another domino falls, and I'm talking about world church history right here now. So the United States of America was long known as a Christian nation, and the Christianity is still by far the most dominant religion in the U.S., right? And in Canada, in Canada, too. And if you trace that back to Europe, you're talking about what Alex is talking about. And with also, you know, England producing the Wesley brothers.
Yeah, John and Charles.
Charles Wesley,
Wesley
and Francis Asbury, and others who came to the U.S. But our and the Pilgrims.
Yeah,
go all the way, which preceded Wesley and John. Oh, I don't know when John Knox lived in Europe, but in Scotland. But I'm just saying that the Christianity from Europe was transported to the United States and to Canada back in the 1600s, 1700s, the 1600s, you're talking Jamestown and Boston, and things begin to develop in the northeastern part of the United States. But, Alex, let me ask you this. And
By the way, John Knox lived in the 1500s.
The 1500s, okay, prior. Let me ask you this. Maybe you don't know the answer to this question, but why was it that the early church, and by early church, I'm talking about the apostles, okay?
Okay.
I'm reading through now, as you guys all have done many times before, but the Acts of the Apostles, and then you get to Corinthians and Romans and all in there, where to Paul, and you just going from town to town to town, starting new Christian, I don't know what they would have called them then, fellowships or whatever like that. But is that the reason, is simply that the reason that the gospel of Jesus Christ and the religion of Christianity was the dominant force became the dominant force in what we know as Europe today, rather than, let's say, the Middle East or Africa, for example?
Yeah, I mean, the early Christians, I mean, they were fervent. They lived and breathed the Great Commission. Now, this is so cool. Okay, Titus 2:11 says, "The grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men." Now, it doesn't mean that everybody had gotten saved, but this is going to blow your mind. Titus was written 37 to 40 years after the cross. So we're talking 4 decades after Jesus died on the cross and rose again. And church historians, and a couple of really good books, Church History in Plain Language by a guy named Bruce Shelley. That's a great book. Christianity Through the Centuries by Earl Carnes. Great book. Another book I would recommend, and I only recommend, Bert and I have a principle. We only recommend a book that we ourselves have read at least once. So Dr. Rick Cornish The 5-Minute Church Historian. That's a fantastic book. This will blow your mind. 40 years after the cross, the gospel had been taken to all of the civilized world. See, sometimes people say, Jesus can't come back until the whole world has heard. Believe it or not, within a generation after Christ had risen, Christians had taken the gospel to the whole wide world. For instance,
even the Orient?
Yes, they had. Christians had gone to the Asian world. They really had. And like, for instance, Wales. Missionaries in the Reformation time were in Wales, and church history tells us Joseph of Arimathea had gone to Wales to preach the gospel. Thomas went to India. Thomas is such a very common surname in India because, you know, Doubting Thomas had gone to India. And it's just amazing how the early Christians lived to evangelize people. By the way, I got to tell you this. Sunday night I was in an event with Dinesh D'Souza, brilliant guy, and he said this, and I think it's really important. He said, look, Muslims today have the fervor of 7th century Arabs, and atheists have the fervor of a Voltaire or a Nietzsche. He said, we Christians, we don't have the fervor of the disciples in the book of Acts. And Dinesh, man, he got to preaching, and he said, we Christians, he said, read the book of Acts and realize that if we're a disciple, we are to have that very same fervor and zeal and commitment. And, you know, guys, let me chase a rabbit for just a second. I was very blessed. My evangelism professor was Bill Bright. And he taught at Liberty, the founder of Campus Crusade. And Bill Bright had this illustration. He said, if every born-again Christian would lead one soul to Christ in the next 12 months, and that person led a soul to Christ in the next 12 months beyond that, then we would run out of humans in under 8 years. I mean, and we can do this. And guys, I was so shy and such an introvert, but I wanted to lead somebody to Christ. And I was like, Lord, please let me lead somebody to Christ. And God answered that prayer many times over. Here's my point. I used to give that illustration at pastors' conferences. And pastors said, I had pastors telling me, Alex, that's unrealistic. The world just probably can't be evangelized. Now, something happened in 2020 called COVID. And this is amazing. In the quarantines. All right, February 1st of 2021, nobody had heard of COVID, really. By March 1st, the whole wide world was wearing masks. Seriously. In a 30-day period, the world went from not really knowing about COVID, and 4 to 5 weeks later, the whole wide world was masked up. And my point in sharing that is that, yes, because God would not give us an assignment that's irrational or undoable. And if the body of Christ were to unite and pray and speak with a unified voice, I believe the world, not everybody's going to believe, but the whole wide world could be told. That this great commission that Christ has given us, it really is doable if we made it the priority.
Amen. Amen. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. So, Alex, you got your youth camps coming up this summer?
We do. The website is equipretreat.org, and we're going to be in Montana. My goodness, no, we're not in Minnesota. Although we did a camp last year in Minnesota, we're in Montana, we're in Georgia, we're in Virginia, and I would just encourage people to please pray for us. We'll have roughly 1,200 teenagers in 7 summer camps, and every year, I mean, last year we had 168 kids get saved. The majority of the kids already are Christian, but we're teaching biblical worldview and how to defend the Christian faith.
Amen. Well, listen, thank you so much, Alex. Appreciate you being on with us this morning. McFarland.
McFarland.
Hey, and by the way, everybody, just next month is the Activate Summit that is going to be in Tupelo.
And you're going to be speaking there.
Yeah, and listen, folks, Ed Vitagliano, in person, live, one of the greatest thinkers that you'll ever hear, and Frank Turek.
I so appreciate you saying that. But nobody's coming to hear me.
It does say the goat on the side of his Diet Coke this morning.
Yeah, Frank Turek will be there. Abraham Alex. Hamilton III, of course. Alex will. And
Todd Herman.
Todd Herman.
Herman and Abraham Hamilton III. This Activate Conference, it's much like the Marriage and Family Life Conference was that we put on here in Tupelo each summer for about 3 or 4 years. So this is coming up June 12th through the 14th, and it's limited seating. About sold out.
Yeah, in fact, are we
sold out?
Is it still open?
Anyway, where do you go to register?
AFA.net/summit.
Mm-hmm. AFA.net/summit, and that's June 12th through the 14th here in Tupelo, Mississippi.
It does say register now, so yeah. I guess folks can still register.
I posted the link on our Facebook page.
Did you? Okay. Mm-hmm. On our Today's Issues Facebook page. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a dynamic conference, and they do have a kids track.
All right. My daughter-in-law said registration ends tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, folks, it is very important that you register now. If you want to come.
So how do they go and read about the itinerary?
Well, they go to activate.afa.net/summit. activate.afa.net/summit. Or you can just go, I think, if you type in afa.net/summit, it will take you to this same website. And you can see the schedule there. There is the kids track, of course, for under 13. But 13 and up will be in with the adults. They'll be getting both barrels from the speakers. So by the way, J.J. Jasper will be doing comedy on our opening night there on Thursday. And then all day Friday, we've got speakers and Saturday.
All right.
Going to be some great stuff.
All right. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. Take care.
God bless. Thank you.
Okay. It's Dr. Alex McFarland. Fred, any thoughts on what Alex was talking about?
Well, absolutely. The spread of the gospel, he had some fascinating points of view on that and how quickly the gospel spread. But, you know, we're not all called to be missionaries as far as going to foreign countries.
I wasn't.
No.
I never felt the calling. I mean, huh? Did you?
No.
No. But
do you have to feel it, though, a calling?
Well, I don't know if you feel it. You just, like anything else in life, a calling is just something that kind of absorbs you.
Yes. Yeah. So, but your street, your neighborhood, your friends, your relatives, they're the mission field that you always have.
I'm with you there.
You know, and what I pray for is opportunities.
Yeah.
And the best time I have found to witness is when somebody has a question. Why do you believe that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Simple question like that. Boy, that opens the door because they asked it.
Right.
They're inquiring. And I pray that people, the Holy Spirit, will lead them to ask those kinds of questions.
I'll tell you something that my pastor, Scooter Noland, who is a board member for AFA. I think he rotates off this year. But one of the things he said that my wife and I try to do, he said, if you're at a restaurant and your waitress comes up, you can say, my wife and I are about to pray over our meal. Is there anything we can pray for you about?
Yeah.
And sometimes that touches people's hearts and they want to hear more.
Absolutely. I've heard great testimonies based on that.
All right. We'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio. And Steve Paisley Jordahl will replace Chris Plaid Woodward. Over here. Thank you, Chris.
Chris is saying, please don't let me get that nickname.
We'll be back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.